Welcome to a brand new episode of the Long Coat Mafia Podcast, the internet's most hated mafia-themed geek podcast. It is I, the Reverend Godfather, the show's main host and frontman, and let's try to keep things short this particular episode, this particular intro, by saying, one, that is a space heater you hear in the background. Two, aren't you glad that this week isn't another retrospective episode, and it's not going to be a long one? I do apologize for putting out the long episodes, but when there's a lot to talk about, yes, they're going to run long. This is going to be a kind of the start of a interview series that we're trying to do, the first of probably many. So this week on the docket is, as you can see, Timothy McLaughlin. He's an actor, writer extraordinaire. We had a wonderful conversation. Unfortunately, this is a Skype call, so you might hear some hicks, some ticks, and so forth and so on that normally happens in Skype calls. So I try to minimize them as much as possible. So just wanted to let you all know. So let me end this right now so we can get into the conversation right here. Folks at home, as kind of promised to all of you, we're trying to bring in new folks and new blood. And today with me, I have actor Timothy Mc, how do you pronounce your last name?
Be McLaughlin.
McLaughlin. Okay.
Yeah.
And Timothy has a wide variety of acting roles that he's done over the years, so it's going to be fun to have a brief conversation. It might not be a long conversation due to Windows updates always giving us issues with how we do Skype calls. I blame Windows. Because we have everything set up the way we need, and all of a sudden update, and therefore it always happens right when we need it. So, Timothy, kindly introduce yourself better than I can to all those at home.
Sure. Hello, everyone. My name is Timothy McLaughlin. I'm an actor, writer, and sometimes producer. And I just wanted to say hi and everybody. Glad to be here.
Happy to have you. You have a... Those... I'm not making it sound like I... in any way, shape, or form... Oh, I'm going to have to get rid of that. Because that is going to make a nuisance coming through everything. Because I don't know where my other phone, my tablet is. I have my computer up, and it's going to, I'm going to hear the ding from Facebook every single time. and it's like, I want to just save that aspect and all that. So what have you done over the past few years that you've had? I know this is going to sound like your atypical question, but, what have you had most fun of? Because I'm looking at your IMDb. You've done some shorts. And again, I'm not knocking you in any way, shape, or form. But it seems like you've been on Monk. You've been on Everybody Hates Chris. And everything else. But what have you had most fun on? Was it acting? But you've also done, as you said, directing and writing. But what have you had the most fun doing?
Oh gosh, you know, the funniest thing is the best thing, the most fun that I've ever had on a set is actually not on my IMDb page. In 2010 or 2011, I actually was Jackie Earle Haley's double in the movie Nightmare on Elm Street. And I had probably more fun dressing up as Freddy Krueger and doing all of the stunts, the second unit stuff, and basically anything that was not Jackie Earle Haley's face, Freddy Krueger's face, basically everything that was, you know, not his face was me in the film. And I had a friggin' blast. It was great walking around dressed like him, doing all the mannerisms, all of the special effects and stunts that were involved with you know, cutting up all the body parts and stuff. It really was a lot of fun.
I want to say, to kind of hone in on that, because we at the show know a lot of horror fans. I want to say that movie, the reboot, if you will, of Nightmare on Elm Street has gotten a lot of flack from fans, from new folks. I thought it was okay. It was a decent film. Just to me, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with you. There's, you know, when you put out an original film that has a massive cult following, you've got to convince that group that this reboot is better than the one they fell in love with. Really hard to do. I mean, extremely difficult. You know, other films like Ghostbusters, there was a lot of flack about the, you know, casting the all-female cast and doing the exact same script line, you know, twisted people the wrong way. So I can appreciate that. I think that what they were trying to do is they were trying to basically bring in a new generation of horror fans that I think more than anything else, I think it pissed off the older generation than the younger generation that saw it. Like if they had never seen the original and they just went in seeing the new one, they'd have a fresh, different perspective and maybe a different appreciation for it. So I can understand the mixed reviews.
To me, I've told people in regards to that particular movie is where I might consider dislike is that the horror genre today is all, let's do PG and PG-13 stuff so a wider audience could get into it, and heck with the R. And that's what kind of diminishes the whole aspect of art, because a lot of us want to see that R, take it to, you know, as far, push that R as much as you can, not the PG-13. And I also love the theater experience. Granted, last year has been a little bit tough on everybody in regards to the theater experience, but I enjoy the theater experience. And
sure.
me as a ticket holder, when I went in to see this particular movie, people weren't treating it like a horror movie. They were treating it literally like a comedy. Not disrespecting you, but they were literally treating it like a comedy. There were scenes that were supposed to be a jump scare or a legit horror scene, and it was like, that's funny. No, it's meant to be scary. Now this is coming from a person who enjoys horror, and I'm like, oh, that's good. Oh, ow, that's, you know, they used that. I didn't think you could use that as a weapon, man. Or I'd laugh at it, but I'm laughing at a different aspect than what it should be. Or I'm like, I'm chuckling, like, I didn't think you could use a kind of a dehydrator as a movie, as a weapon like that, you know, something like that. But it was just
they run through they run through the gambit of just about every possible weapon you can imagine, you know, to slaughter, you know, to dismember, you know, it's I think they're running out of ideas.
Yeah, true.
And while I agree with you on the fact that you know, the PG-13 ratings and whatnot, the horror genre is really making a different sort of a transition to a lot of independent filmmakers. The independent filmmakers that are creating the similar types of horror films that we saw back in the 70s and the 80s are really making their, that's where they're really making the good ones. I've actually had a friend who actually did a horror movie not too long ago, and it just made the festival circuits, and it was really nice and creepy. And, you know, you've got movies like Blair Witch, and you've got movies like Paranormal Activity. I mean, those films really were low-budget, independently created films, as opposed to these big-budget films. And they're literally going back to that era because, I mean, the Friday the 13th and the Nightmare on Elm Street, those first films were very low budget. And yet they had such incredible theatrical success. So, you know, nowadays, today, everybody's trying to do the basic shock and awe with special effects and makeup. And the makeup, it's not even the makeup anymore. They're literally doing special effects on the actors, motion capture, you know, what the effect that they did in the first Captain America, where they made Steve Rogers look, you know, anorexically thin. You know, these digital enhancements that they're putting into these movies right now, as you know, they're not as shock and awe. They're just like, oh, wow, that's cool, like you had said earlier. Instead of these jump scare scenes, you know, where, oh, my gosh, what's happening? People are more fascinated with the special effects, and they're not worried about the jump scares anymore. So, it's definitely become all about technical sophistication instead of, you know, really getting into the makeup part of it and really getting into the plot scary moments.
That's why I kind of love the – I agree with you there. I enjoy the indie scene, that there are a lot of places that slip through the radar and make it to the mainstream. The two that I could name off the top of my head is Kung Fury and Velocipaster. They're very self-aware, and they're very B, you know, low budget, and they're just, let's just do this for the sake of indie. They're original, that's new. They don't have to worry about the studio influences in any way, shape, or form. And they're just taking an idea and run with it. It's like, wait a minute. It's like the old, like you said, the old school days of the 70s and 80s. Oh, it's two guys or two folks sitting somewhere like, I got this idea. Let's take a guy, have him turn into a velociraptor when he's angry and eating like women. That's totally screwed up. Let's do it. And
A lot of out of the box thinkers that you know, that were probably sitting around in a living room smoking and drinking and you know, taking bong hits and laughing at situations, and all of a sudden they stop laughing and they look at each other and they say, "That's it. We're doing it," you know, and then they go on the journey. So many of these ideas and concepts are spawned at the most unexpected times. You know, I've come up with many ideas while I'm laying in bed at night. If I wake up and I can't sleep, I'm just sitting there and I'm thinking and thinking, and all of a sudden I come up with thoughts and I come up with ideas. And then of course I piss my wife off and I wake her up and tell her my ideas so that in the morning when I wake up, she can remind me of what I was thinking about it the night before.
And the best part is, with a lot of the folks that are in the indie scene and the ultra low budget, the Kickstarter type deals, is that they could get some cult folks to help do their movie, but a lot of times it's like, hey, Tommy, you want to be in a movie? We can't really pay you other than pizza and beer and give you an IMDb credit. You in? Yeah, I'm in. Let's do this. IMDb bragging rights, man. That sort of thing. Yeah. And it might be the cheesiest, stupid thing out there, but it's original and everybody has fun. And that's, you know.
Yeah. Paranormal Activity was filmed on like a $10,000 budget.
Right.
You and know, it made like the very first Paranormal.
I think with all the when you factor in advertising and all that, let's say $1 million with advertising, and it made like over $100 million. So
sure, and it funded their next couple of films.
Right, but it's that thing. It's like everybody has fun, but the mainstream folk that go see a Warner Brothers film or Disney film, a lot of them don't get it. They don't get it.
No.
It's weird, but the more folks wake up to the indie scene, it's like, wait a minute, especially those like my, even though like I do this i.e. podcasting, but for the folks that go to the local shows, whether it be a local pop culture show or a whatever, a horror show, or to have, again, whatever, and seeing this independent artist doing their, you know, hustle and flow and selling DVDs or Blu-rays for $5-$10, you're out $5-$10, and you might actually enjoy something. You have a laugh.
Yeah. No, yeah, I mean, that's a good point. You're talking about the investment versus the reward risk. And a lot of people out there will sit there, even online. I mean, everything is being streamed nowadays, and everything is being, you know, you've got instant gratification. They have an attention span of like 15 seconds. So, you know, some of these, the best stuff that's out there is, you know, being streamed on either YouTube or other media. And, you know, they're really short clips, and they do like these series of short clips. You know, it's a project actually that I'm trying to manifest and bring out there. I've got a really great suspense thriller script that I'm working on that absolutely deals with, you know, hey, how many minutes do you think the audience is going to be interested before they start surfing for another thing to stream? And right. You go, oh, okay. Well, maybe about 5 or 6 minutes. So you do a scene, or you do a little film, and you edit it and you put it out there, and you have a nice tag at the, or not a tag, but you have a nice cliffhanger at the end of the 6 or 8 minutes. And then you put up a tune in next week or tune in tomorrow for another episode. And then you constantly just churn this stuff out, and you know, it's something that is here, and that's what this generation, this new generation, is they're into. I mean, gosh, look at Cobra Kai and all these other play things. They drop like 10 episodes at one time, and people will watch the entire season in a day. And you sit there and you go, gosh, that's got to be like a major letdown at the end of the day, because you're so overloaded on this show, and then all of a sudden you want more. And now you got to wait another year before you can see it again.
Right. I think as much as to, I'm going to agree with you in regards to, especially with YouTube and streaming, because I don't know if you've seen the documentary. It's on Netflix. It's called From Kung Fu Kicks to Iron Fists or something like that. And it's all about the popularity of Kung Fu movies and how it became like this cult phenomenon in America and urban culture and all that. And part of what they went into is what you said. A lot of the folks that want to kind of hone their craft and hone this independent, see if they got the chops to do a Kung Fu movie of their own. So they go to YouTube because they don't have a budget. They don't have any way to distribute their thing or see if there's an interest. So they do a quick scene on YouTube. They get enough money for a camera. They do a couple of friends together. They put it on YouTube. And if it works, they do a Kickstarter. And it has that aspect of growing from there. And from there, it can go to Amazon or Netflix or, you know, Hulu or some streaming service that might be out there that wants to take a chance. So
Yeah, it does. I mean, what it does is it's a double-edged sword, because it really pisses off the people that spent years and years and years in college and in cinematography school and all of this stuff, and they're sitting there and they're primed to go out into the real world, and they're primed, oh, I'm going to get my big movie break, and I'm going to be filming this, or I'm going to be acting in this. And me as an actor, you know, I spent 5 years getting my fine arts degree at a university. I spent 9 years of training and studying under incredible mentors. And then you get these people and teenagers that come out and throw something down on TikTok, and they become a national treasure. It's mind-boggling. It angers actors like myself. And then you sit there and you go, what can I do? Well, I either adjust and conform and do that myself, or I sit here and I wallow in my hatred and anger for these kids who are basically taking a media platform and taking advantage of it. So it's unbelievable. I mean, I had a producer friend of mine, an Academy Award-winning producer friend of mine, who we got into this conversation because he had done a film and he was casting all of these social media influencers. And I said to him, I said, none of them have any acting experience. I go, they're just randomly doing these, 10-second, 15-second videos. And then he turned to me and he said, it doesn't matter, which really hit home. He said, it really doesn't matter. He says, only thing that matters today is how many people are following them, because those are the people that are going to go and watch them in the movie theaters. And
or
it dawned on me.
Rented on Vudu or Amazon, yep, or someplace.
Exactly, exactly. Go to those platforms. Oh, my favorite Instagram influencer is in this movie. I'm going to go check it out. And yeah, you're absolutely right, Chris. It's where they're streaming it. Hulu, all of the platforms. So it does. It's the seasoned actor and the actor that has studied and worked so hard to get to that level of perfection is now completely being cast aside and is being looked over for these influencers. And it's crazy. It's maddening. It makes me want to pull out my beard hair. I don't have any hair on my head, so there's nothing else I can do. But yeah, it is. Have to adapt or die.
Yeah, I could agree with that too, because there's a independent, I won't say creator. If you want to say, yeah, we could go with that. Independent creator. He's done a whole mess of independent films, both, I want to say, semi-large and small, meaning managed to do one movie that got distribution in Walmart and on several major streaming platforms, including Vudu and Amazon, to rent and buy. I don't know if it's still available, but the thing is, he's now on TikTok, kind of like, oh, I got this brief little idea to do let's see if I could revisit this character. And he'll create a little bit of like a minute sket or 30-second sket with the character to see if people will bite and watch. And if not, if it does, he does a little bit of a series with it. And at least to kind of get his name out there, get a little bit of following. And when he does something major, he has that base, in a way.
Yeah.
So it's a way for him to be creative and test the waters of what this new platform is able to bring him and advertise for. So it's weird.
Well, I mean, but the thing that comes along with all of this, a much more heightened level of pressure for these young kids, because like I said, the attention span of its audience can be as little as 15 seconds, and then they're moving on to the next new hottest influencer. So if you're...
Timothy, yeah. I'm going to have to ask you to, or I say kindly ask you to repeat that, because for the past, I don't know, 20, 30 seconds, all I was getting was... for some reason. So you were saying, you could have been saying the most epic, inspirational stuff, and all we got was the secrets of the universe are.
I was giving away government secrets, and Big Brother was canceling me. That's what it was.
I was expecting when you came back on, and that's my TED Talk. I'm like, wait a minute, what the hell?
That would have been perfect.
And if it was, I would have. I trimmed some of it while I was waiting for you to come back. I still have to go in and probably trim the rest. But if you came back on and said, "And that, folks, is my TED Talks. Thank you very much." I would have just went, you know what? I'm leaving it in just to be a troll to everybody. You know what? I might leave it in just so folks know what we're talking about.
Well, I could do a lead-in with you right now, and I could say, hey, and that was an incredible story. It was life-changing for me. And then you could just splice that at the end. So, anyways, listen, to just do a quick recap on it, it's basically talking about these kids who are constantly pushing the envelope. And I don't know where it happened, but like if you've seen the movie Jackass, and you see that guy always doing all these outrageous stunts. Well, what's happening now is you've got these influencers who are constantly, constantly pushing the envelope every single time they do a little TikTok or film something. And then in order to keep those viewers coming back, they've got to raise the bar, and they got to keep raising the bar, and they got to do something more outrageous every time. And sooner or later, you know, it's going to get to a critical level, and these kids are going to either, you know, off themselves, or they're going to do something that's going to be really, really bad in the end result.
Or so, there's going to be burnout.
There's going to be burnout. And then of course, you end up and you see a lot of these. I don't know if you've been reading, but there's been a lot of influencers that have been committing suicide. And,
sadly.
You know,
sadly.
Or dying.
Quitting.
Yeah.
Various stuff. And I want to agree with you that is that one of the creators I follow on, I think it was our video, it was one of the YouTube video, he was kind of explaining why YouTube is kind of the way it is and how tough it is to be a YouTuber, because he was explaining for the longest time, granted, there's always trends on YouTube. First, it was like webtoons, then it was gamers, then it was creepypastas, then it was this. There's that type of trends, but for the vlogger and the social influencer on YouTube, first it was you could do, this is back in the days when there was folks like Markiplier, and it's still, even though he's still big, and PewDiePie is huge, but what it is, what happened with YouTube, at first you can make a video a month, therefore then it was a video a week, then it was a video a day, then it's two videos a day, in order to not just remain relevant, but to manage to stay relevant in regards to the algorithm, not the fans.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily even about, well, the algorithm, yes, but it literally is about, I mean, if you lose, like, you know, if you've got somebody that's an influencer and he's got, you know, let's say 500,000 followers or 1,000,000 followers, and all of a sudden he loses maybe 20,000, you know, that's a panic. You know, it's a trend. It's like, you know what it's like? It's like living on the stock market. It's like you are a stock.
Right.
The performer is a stock, and all of a sudden that stock goes skyrockets overnight. And then to maintain that value of the stock, you've got to continue to perform and outperform and create new stuff. And if you don't, then your stock starts to fall. And if it crashes, you dissolve. And so making that comparison is actually pretty on point, because these kids burn out. I mean, so many of them are, I've never seen so many of them end their lives in their mid to late 20s. It's mind-boggling.
Let me just, for the sake of everything out there, to put this out there, folks, if you are in any way, shape, or form having similar thoughts, please call the national hotline or any local hotlines to speak with someone that can help, or please seek help for that. Just, I'm just saying that just for the sake of.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Couldn't agree with you more, man.
It's tough, you know, it's for the folks out there, especially this time of year. I know the year just started. We all know 2020 has been a tough year, a little bit more than most, and wintertime is a little hard on a lot of people as it is, especially through the holidays. So if you need help, please seek help somewhere, somehow. There is help for you. So
couldn't agree more, man. Couldn't agree more, Chris. Well put. And the fact is this, everybody has had some moment in their life of depression. I've had many bouts of depression in my life. If you don't have bouts of depression in your life, you're not a human being. You are a robot. Everybody has ups and downs emotionally in life. And if you get to that point where you're down there, you need to seek a friend. You need to seek somebody. It could be a stranger that recognizes where you're at. You just need to talk to people. Talk it out, because the best thing to do is have conversations about it, not hide away, not go and hide, because that makes it worse. And it's just, you know.
Yeah, there are various ways to to combat this. One of the best ways is to seek help somewhere and with someone. If you have strange friends, have weird friends, have messed up friends, weird sense of humor friends, because they're the ones that are going to bring you out of that darkness. And I could tell po folks right now, is like I've been telling folks, when I got diagnosed with diabetes, it's a life-changing event. I didn't know until I got into the hospital, thanks to my co-host. And the doctors were pretty much, the nurses were like, "We get it. We understand. We want you to get better. Come on, you can get better. Cheer up. Look at the bright side and all that," and helping me keep my spirits up. But the doctors were the ones like, "How dare you?" Insert, if I had a soundboard, I'd have the Gretchen sound going, "How dare you?" I'm like, "Wait a minute, I didn't know I had diabetes. That's why I'm here." So, and
It's amazing, especially what you just said, Chris, about the medical people and the doctors and the nurses, and it's really interesting. The nurses see this kind of emotion every day. The doctors see it from time to time, because they're not literally there all the time checking in on you or
Right.
other. They pop in from time to time, so they see little glimpses of it. And I'm not going to take away, I don't want to take away anything from doctors,
Right.
but the nurses and the therapists, they see it every day in and day out. And I've got nieces that are nurses, and boy, you talk about someone that really has to have it together. Are these nurses and physical therapists and people that are helping people that are depressed? Because that's a really big task. It
Yeah,
really is.
and they're the ones that understand that if you kind of have the aspect of, if I don't laugh at this, if I don't bring in some sort of humor, I'm gonna go down a dark path, or I need that spark. It's gonna drive me insane if I don't laugh at it. They understand in some way. They might not like it, but they understand. So, I'm not knocking the medical, the nurses, the EMTs, those on the front lines in any way, shape, or form. It's just some of the folks that I do knock is like, folks, we're gonna time travel a little bit. I'm gonna say in a past episode, because this is gonna drop at a later date, me and Big Candy kind of talk about my co-host talk about the New Year's Eve streaming stuff, and how it just was this downer. They're like, "Oh, remember all this, COVID?" And you're like, "No, it's your job to, it's the end of the year. Let's celebrate. Let's, it's over. We're starting a brand new year. Get a couple of comedians in. Get a couple of, people to tell funny stories or something like that. Get, you know, I don't, it's like, I told him, it's like, listen, I don't care for some jug band out of Louisiana or Kentucky, in a this a hall, empty hall for safety reasons. It's better than nothing. It's better than nothing, and they get promo. Everybody's ha happy. So.
No, I mean, you got to mix it up. You got to mix it up. I mean, look, when I started off in acting, all I did was comedy. All
Right.
I did was comedy. And I was so good at it, and I loved it, and I still do it, and I still love it. But when you make transitions, you grow, you things happen to you. Your body changes where you no longer fit a certain type of role. Like, I mean, I could have been in every Revenge of the Nerds movies. I was a little geeky guy. I was 5'6" and I was 118, 120 pounds. I mean, I literally was that little geeky guy. And then as I got older and I got married and my wife started feeding me better, I started getting bigger, and my hair started falling out, and the changes that happen. As an actor, you have to reinvent yourself. You have to sit there and go, okay, well, I can still play the nerd guy, but Boy, I've got a different edge to me now. I can now explore this type of a character, and I can play with this guy. I mean, I did an NBC pilot called Awake. Ran for about a season. They picked it up, and then it ran one season, and they canceled it. It starred Jason Isaacs, who played Lucius Malfoy from all of the Harry Potter movies, and great actor.
As much as you're the central part of this, I gotta ask, did they cast
Yeah.
him as, pardon my vulgarity, an asshole?
No,
Oh,
actually,
really?
they cast him. He was a police officer. He was a cop. He was a detective. And
Huh.
it
The
was.
reason
I
why I
mean,
ask is
you talk
because
about science fiction. Yeah.
the
Go ahead.
reason why I ask is because a lot of, it seems a lot of the things that he's been cast in, or at least I've seen him in, he kind of portrays some sort of asshole. Like,
Yeah. No.
why do they gotta
Totally the
keep?
opposite.
Yeah, it's like he always comes off like in interviews like this nice guy, but he's always seems to play a douchebag. Why? He's like,
Yeah,
let him change it up. But
and he did played a detective, and it was like a multi-dimensional film. It was really cutting edge, but I don't know if it was ahead of its time or what. But NBC picked it up for a year. In the pilot, I played a like a 40-something-year-old pedophile slash teacher, molester, whatever you want to call it. I played this creepy, creepy dude. And I had never played anything that twisted before. So it was a whole new experience for me. And really, really, I mean, it was a rush to go into that sort of a realm as an actor that I had not been into before.
One of
So
those types of
always,
role. Let me
always.
guess. It was one of those types of roles that once you got home, it was like, I gotta take a shower. I feel icky.
Yeah, one of those roles. I gotta have a scotch and just sit back and watch something on television that was more lighthearted. Yeah, but it was. I really do though. I mean, I can only imagine what Heath Ledger went through to process the Joker from the Batman Returns. I mean, I can only imagine. And a lot of my friends had heard stories about how he was never the same after it, you know, and that led to his, you know, substance abuse or whatever it did that became his demise. And I was, you know, in fact, I just watched that film a couple of nights ago, and I just sat there and I said, this guy is living this character. This guy is completely engulfed in it, and you know, that's hard to get out of. It
Yeah,
really is. It's hard to get out of.
I was speaking to a friend of mine on New Year's, and we were talking about Heath Ledger, and he was telling me, it's like, he said to me, and said, I don't think his role as the Joker is what pushed him over the year edge, or at least started that downward spiral. I was like, all right, go on. We're talk. Where it's the end of the year. We're talking. We're having a great conversation. We're having a good time. Go on. Beat the theory. And he said, well, he was in Monsters Ball, and his character in that was way, in essence, way worse than his role as the Joker. He was only in it for maybe 15, 20 minutes, but it was way darker, way worse. So that could have been the pebble that started the avalanche in regards to some things. So
I'm not sure about that. I mean, I didn't have much trouble coming out of this role, and I filmed for a week. I don't know how many days or weeks that he was engulfed in that character, but the longer you stay in a character, the longer you're filming that character, the harder it is to pull out of it. Bottom line, there's no question about it. And Heath Ledger, brilliant actor. I could tell he used a lot of method acting in his role as the Joker. I could be wrong. A lot of these people, a lot of these actors that take on these roles, they're really never the same, or they're not the same for many, 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 many years. I mean, Matthew McConaughey took a long time to get out of Dallas Buyers Club. When you do physical transformations of your body, a lot of times it takes such a huge toll. Tom Hanks in
Castaway.
God Castaway, yeah, thank you. Had some health issues. In fact, he was went diabetic or something himself for a short period of time. And I don't know
if either him or somebody else.
Yeah. There was another actor who had to put on a tremendous amount of weight. Yeah. Gosh, who was it?
It was in around the same time.
Crap. Yeah. Yeah. And they do. They have massive health issues when they put that kind of stress on their bodies, because they have to gain weight tremendously and then they have to lose it tremendously because you have to appear in the film heavy set and then you have to appear in the film very thin. And those kinds of severe physical transformations, I mean, they can really mess with your health. I mean, badly mess with your health.
Especially considering how Hollywood, it's gotten better. Either was or kind of might still be. I'm not making any accusations. But to kind of correlate what you're saying is I was watching something today about Julie Garland in regards to her career. Uh-huh. And the studios are like, no, you got to, you know, they were constantly saying she's overweight. You know, look at this little piggy behind her back and just feeding her, you know, because they back then there was no work limits. OK, we're going to end it today at this time. Everybody go home, get some rest, come back tomorrow. It was 17-hour days, sleep for four, you know, come back. So they had everybody on drugs and her on weight loss stuff. And
The studios had – the studios owned you. They bought you for – they contracted you for, like, X number of films. I mean, they owned you. They literally owned you, and they were able to do whatever they wanted with you during those days. And it really wasn't until they had some major, major ratifications – within the SAG contracts, and of course, many, many strikes, many, many strikes, so that they could get to where they are today. And today, it's still the same way, you know. In the acting industry, it's like you put up or shut up.
I think today it's a little bit better. Another case in point could be the Three Stooges. The reason why I say that is because if I'm remembering some of the history right, folks at home, if I'm wrong, please correct me down in the usual spots. From what I heard, again, folks, from what I heard, that the studio kept the popularity of the Three Stooges away from those guys, from Moe, Curly, Shemp, everybody. It wasn't until they were Moe and Curly and Larry were invited someplace, and there's this huge crowd, you know, and they were pretty much overrun with popularity and like, oh my God, it's Mo, it's, you know, it's Larry, oh my God, can I have your autograph? And that's when they realized that, wait a minute, maybe we should be getting more than $25 a week from the studios. Like, maybe we should ask for a little bit more. So
sure. Yeah. No, I mean, that's certainly a lot of suppression that they did on the actors back then, back in the days. But, you know, you had your Errol Flynn's, and these people, they were the big movie stars. They were they belonged to their own exclusive little club and Hollywood and the Hollywood elites. And, you know, a lot of crazy crap went on back then. A lot of questionable behaviors. A lot of you know, Hollywood is got a lot of skeletons. A lot of skeletons. I mean, it's a lot. Some of it's being exposed to this day, and but there's still a very, very dark underbelly in Hollywood.
Yeah, and when it comes out or a light shined on it, it's like, no, you get the aspect of from the public. No, they wouldn't do that.
Why would
they do that? And
there
are instances. I'm like,
there
are instances that I could remember. I'm not going to bring them up here in regards to certain people. But when I look back on their career, it's like, oh my God, the signs were there. Why didn't anybody notice it back then? Oh, that's, it's just, Weird.
Well, the actors were terrified. The actors were terrified of being blackballed. And
it's
same
not
thing
just
with
that.
Directors.
One
and same things with everyone.
Well, the one person I'm talking about, just that some of the stuff I heard that came out about him, he initially started as an actor in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And he became a very big name for Nickelodeon. And some of the, I'll say this, they were, I don't know how true, they were, as far as I know, circumstantial. And I'll use words like allegedly, one of my favorite words to use on the show. But when you look at those accusations or alleged accusations and you look at his career and what he's put out, you're like, you know, call me Alex Jones, but it seems very plausible, you know. It's just like that. It's like, well, if it walks like a duck, talks like a duck, got to be a duck. But and it won't know until it actually comes out. But as you said, it a lot of times stuff is hidden. They don't want to bring it out until you get something similar to the Me Too movement. So.
That even not even that, but sometimes a lot of this stuff doesn't go out until unless that individual has passed away. And then all of a sudden, magically, stuff starts floating out there. Oh, yeah, this guy was this and he or she was this or he was that. I mean, the Hollywood has a very, like I said, there's also a nice circle in there that keeps tabs on things. And look, it cuts both ways. I mean, you know, you could either people either have things held over their heads to keep them quiet and, or their careers, you know, a lot of people's careers have faded into nothing for having specific, whether political beliefs or whether it's objections to certain things. I mean, you know, they never work again in Hollywood. And
for the sake of humor and a tinfoil hat theory, which I shall put on right now, could that over arcing thing be Scientology? No.
You know, I'm really not sure. I have not embedded myself into that much of Hollywood, but I can say this. There is, you know, I had an experience right out of the gate. When I first got one of my big roles. It was a certain miniseries where I found a lot of levels of nepotism within the production, a lot of levels of nepotism, you know, favoritisms, things that directors, people that directors preferred over people they hadn't preferred or they didn't work with. I've seen directors that I've worked with who I'm fresh and new on the set, you know, to them, I've never worked with them before. And then they've worked with other actors that are on the set with me. And there's a total different relationship that goes on. So I've seen, you know, directors behave one way to one actor and completely a different way to another actor. It really is very interesting. You know, you've got all of these, what's the kid? There's like the kid actor from, she was in the Herbie movies, the bus, Herbie the Love Bug. God,
Lindsay Lohan.
I was going to say it begins with an L. Yeah, Lindsay Lohan. I mean, you know, all of the things and how famous she was, you know, as a young Disney actor, and then, you know, all the crazy stuff that happened with her afterwards, and how, you know, Hollywood would just literally not work with her anymore, you know, for certain behaviors or whatever she did. There were a lot of actors that literally Amanda Bynes, another one. You know, I'm sure they're excellent. You know, I've seen their work and they're very good. I mean, Amanda Bynes was she was brilliant when she was a young kid.
The thing is, what you see every now and again, for every probably Lindsay Lohan and Amanda Bynes that's out there, you're going to have someone like Winona Ryder. I'm probably butchering her name. Or, what's his name? Robert Downey Jr., that they hit a low, they did some bad crap, and all of a sudden, they bounced back and found something that relaunched their career, or they found something that just put them back in the limelight just for a little bit, in a way.
Sure.
So.
Yeah, they get a second chance. Some of them get third chances, but there's everybody has life events that take them literally down a totally different path than what they thought they were going to go. And sometimes it's a good path, sometimes it's a shitty path. But it's something that is, when you get to a crossroad in their life, they either pick themselves up and make better successes, reinvent themselves, or they mature out of it. I mean, for the likes of Robert Downey Jr., I just think the light bulb finally went on. I mean, I know he had a couple of moments, when he was in jail for when he spent some time in jail. I think that was a really interesting awakening for him, and I think he came out of that with his light bulb bright and on and completely aware of, hey, I can't do any of this anymore, or I've got to change myself, or I'm
Yeah,
going back in, or I'm going
I think
to,
one of his light bulb moments was the fact that I think the story goes that he went to a Burger King and the burger he had, as he claimed, or I should say, as the story goes, sucked really bad, and that was like his "What am I doing?" moment. Why should I do this? I gotta do something better with my life than don't I'm gonna. I don't know the full story, so it could be I'm doing drugs and I'm eating at a Burger King. I should be better than this and just dig this
I had an
myself out of the
epiphany
hole.
moment like that in my life. I met a girl right out of college, and God, I thought she was the one and everything. And I was working at the Disney MGM Studios in Orlando when they first opened up, and she wanted to move back up to her family back up in Tennessee, and I followed her up there, and I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know why I was doing it. I just knew I was doing it. I had a different brain. I had a different head controlling my life at that time. And when
We've
I got
all
there,
had
I,
that head control us,
oh
Timothy.
gosh, yes, I know. And it was
Double
like,
entendres
it was
implied.
24, yeah, 23, 24. And as I got up there, I mean, I had a nice car. I was so excited when I got out of college. I bought a 1987 Pontiac Fiero, and I was, oh man, this is like the best. I was hot shit. And I go up there, and I couldn't find a job. I was a fish out of water up there. And within like 4 months, I had lost everything. I mean, they repossessed my car. I couldn't pay. They were going to evict me from my apartment. I mean, I was losing everything. And I'll never forget when the guy came and repossessed my car and they took off and I watched it go away. I walked around the back of my apartment and I sat on this big rock and I just broke down in tears. I mean, just broke down in tears. And I had a really good cry for about maybe 3 minutes. And all of a sudden I stopped. And all of a sudden I listened and everything was deathly quiet. And it was literally right at sunset. And I just had an epiphany. I said, this has got to change. I got to get up and do something different and change. And I did. And I left. I said, bye, I'm out of here. And I moved all my stuff back down and I started applying for work. And I ended up getting a job at Universal Studios in Orlando, right back on the horse, and boom. Right back into the lane that I wanted to be in. But people get sidetracked all the time in life, and
Right.
actors sometimes can't get out of it. But very, 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 very much there have been low points in my life, and you just got to literally look in the mirror and slap your face and say, snap out of it, snap out of it.
I think what also might happen is like you either do what you did and slap yourself out of it, but I think all what is might be the major problem is with not just those that might be in Hollywood, but you might see it in with like YouTube and other places that the ego gets to them, and it sometimes the ego spreads to other people because you get, oh, because my son is famous, he should be allowed to do what he my son or daughter is famous, so therefore it's okay to do what they do. They get, meaning the parent gets a little bit of an ego trip too, because their kids are famous. And instead of, let me put it like this, they need somebody, they get the yes men and all that, they need somebody to say no. That aspect.
Exactly.
If you want to, have you seen the movie Mr. Deeds?
With Adam
Sandler? Yeah.
Yeah.
The whole little bit of a subplot when the quarterback comes in and he goes, if you don't give me more pay, I'm out. And he's like, all right, leave. And the subplot is like the quarterback calls from his dad's house. And he's like, I'm sorry. My dad wants to, you know, he apologizes. Like, and the dad's like, he shouldn't have done that. And he's like, he shouldn't have insulted women, you know, as well. And he's like, he did what? I'm sorry, Dad. No.
It's
made for a laugh, but sometimes you might need somebody to at least like, you did what?
To kind of give you that
wake up call.
Yeah, we've all been through it, and we've all been through it in a way. I mean, the biggest thing is if you watch all these famous actors now, look at their kids.
Right.
Okay. I don't want to point out certain individuals, but I will. You know, Will Smith and Jada Pinkett but look at their kids. I mean, how they have turned out. Now they're very proud of their kids, and that's great. Yeah. But a lot of other people can look at it and say, "Holy smokes!" You know, those kids are messed up. And
some of the tweets that Jaden put out, it's like, "Will, your kid is insane. Please,
I mean, but you're not living in their shoes. You're not walking their path. You're not. I mean, these are superstars. These are Hollywood royalty type of people in Will Smith and Jada Pinkett, and they have these kids that are constantly being dragged around on red carpet. They're constantly being bombarded with flashes and voices and things like that. And look at all of the kids of famous people. I mean, you could even go so far as, I mean, look at how Ozzy Osbourne's kids, you know, have turned out. They've been in the spotlight. Look at Cher's kid and look at all of these superstars that have children that have gone through terrible, terrible situations with substance abuse. And you know, it's a tough situation to be in. You know, as a parent, you're so busy working, there's nobody raising them.
But the thing is, you might get,
thank God.
For every, you know, kid that's like Jaden Smith or, you know, Ozzy's kids or something like that, you might also get someone like Zelda Williams, Robin Williams' kid. You know, you barely heard anything of her, but she's doing wonderful work.
Yeah.
Or the fact of Steve Irwin's kids, you know, they're in essence following in their father's footsteps, doing wonderful work with animals and educating folks with animals, you know. There's that meme I saw on Facebook a long time ago. It's of Steve Irwin's daughter, and she's got this tarantula, huge tarantula on her, and on the caption is like, in essence, this bitch is crazy. You know, look at her. Hold on. Wait a minute. This is Steve Irwin's kid? As you were. You know, just.
I hear you. I can totally, I totally hear you. Some of the kids, but again, it's, you could sit there and you say, well, it's the parenting. It's the parenting. Steve Irwin's wife, you know, after he passed away, I guarantee you she was very protective of these kids. And there are certain superstars and mainstream media people that have children that they're protecting them. You know, they protect the heck out of them. And a lot of times those kids end up growing up. And then when they do get out in society, they have a little bit more grounding to them.
Right.
There are famous movie stars that won't let their kids near anything that they're doing, you know. And they lead normal lives, and they grow up and become accountants, engineers, or, you know, whatever you want to call it. And they're able to assimilate without having issues. It's the ones that the parents either neglect or the ones that the parents sort of bring along the red carpet with them and give them all that exposure. And it's sort of overwhelming for them. And I think it's, you know, I mean, far be it from me to tell parents how to raise their kids. I mean, I raised two kids and I love them incredibly, but they're two different people. You know,
right.
they totally do different things. So, you know, once they get to that age, you really have to let them go. But
you could encourage them. I spoke to somebody. He's a friend on Facebook. He's been on the show. He's a proud pappy of two very young kids. I want to say between maybe I want to say four and under. And when his first child was born, granted, I'm not a dad. I don't play one on TV. I'll say that right now. I'm still under training with my dad puns, but even my friends say someday you will be the master, but for now, training. But the best thing I was telling him was like, granted, I'm not a dad. You're now a dad. The best thing you could do is try. Number one. Number two, you are now the troll. He's like, what do you mean? Pickle juice.
Yep.
That sort of thing's like, you don't ever abuse your kids, but be the troll. Be the fun troll. Do stuff that's not going to wreck them mentally, but it's just going to be fun. Give them a jalapeno.
Oh, yeah.
Tell it's a pickle. You know, it's
The first the lemon experience. Give the kid the lemon the first time.
Yeah, it's a good
let them. You give them everything. Yeah, give them all these experiences, and let them enjoy experiences. You know, get them on a roller coaster as soon as they meet the height requirement.
Right.
Get them get them out in the deep end of the swimming pool as long as you're there to watch them. And. And, you know, you got it. I mean, kids are always going to test their boundaries. I mean, when I was a kid, my older brother was an absolute moron. He was a nut. He did everything to piss my mom off and my little 5'2" Italian lady. And literally, I'll never forget it. I'm in the house and I'm doing my little thing. I love playing with my Hot Wheels and stuff like that. And all of a sudden I hear my brother outside and he's like, Mom, come on out. Come here. I want to show you something. And my mom comes out and she looks around. And I mean, we lived in a house up in a little tiny town in Connecticut. So there's a forest everywhere. And my mom's literally walks out. And she says, Where are you? I'm up here. And my mom looks up like my brother, who was probably about 7, 8 years old at the time, had climbed up the top of a pine tree. It must have been about, at least 50 feet high. Okay. And he's up there, 7-year-old kid, 50 feet off the ground. My mother literally has a heart attack. She starts screaming at him, get your ass down here, and swearing all up at him. And my brother's just sitting there smiling. You know, he's literally at the thinnest part of the branch up there, and the wind is blowing the top of him, and he's just weaving back and forth.
Having a good old time, probably.
Oh, just laughing his ass off. And I'm sitting there, and I'm laughing my ass off, because I'm just enjoying the moment of my mom coming unglued. And my brother up there laughing. And needless to say, my mom spent the next 10 minutes, 15 minutes watching him climb down. And as soon as he got to the bottom, she had the ruler waiting for him, you know, and the wooden spoon. And oh my God, she broke so many wooden spoons on my brother.
Let me guess. At the time, for him, it was totally worth it, though.
Oh God, yeah.
But,
yeah, no,
me,
well.
On that, let me
the
relay
punishment
this.
Was worth it.
Let me relay this. I didn't see the aftermath, but I was on the bus. I was up front. The bus stop, and the person, it was a mom, two very young kids, an older sister, no more than maybe 4, if not 5 or 6, top 6. And the brother might have been maybe a year or two younger, not in school yet. And
yeah.
The sister gets on the bus first. Now, both these kids earned the achievement, sibling rivalry achievement unlocked sort of deal. Meaning,
yeah,
the sister tripped going up the steps of the bus. The little brother laughed his ass off. And like,
sure.
And it's like, that's the brother. He just earned the, I don't have a brother. He just earned the brother trophy. Trophy.
Yeah.
The mom was a little bit concerned. Like, you can, being a mom, like, you're all right. You can do this. They sat behind me. And I hear the mom pretty much tell her son, don't worry, your sister, you know, rides the bus to school all the time. You'll be all right. I mean, it's from my gathered that this was his first bus ride.
Yeah.
Don't worry. Don't, there's nothing to fear. No, right? And I hear him, I know, baby. I know, baby. You know, just like, he, I'm like, you're earning every achievement unlock you're getting right now. He's like, you're just, you're trying to be that 15-year-old. Like, I ain't no baby.
Yeah, it's like my older brother. Yeah, pushing every boundary, every limit, you know, just daredevil in it all over the place. Those are the kids that usually have a broken arm when they're three, and then they get like a tooth knocked out when they're six.
His response was, because when his mom said, don't be scared, his response was, I know scared. Total 4-year-old speech, I know scared. And obviously, I think his sister is one that said, or whispered, baby. And that's when he said, I'm not baby. You know, it's just like, oh, you both just earned everything. I could almost hear the mom laughing at the two just at it, being siblings, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm one of six. I grew up with five other siblings, and you know, we were an Irish Italian family, and we had the station wagon, and you know, the 2.5-hour summer vacation trips to relatives' lake houses. Just the 2.5-hour trip was in and of itself an episode of just a comedy of errors. I mean, it literally was and you could see the my dad with the vein popping in his head while he's driving down the road, and my mom every 5 minutes climbing over the back of the seat to hit one of us. It was, you know, it literally was. It was a three-ring circus. You know, six kids, and they're spread apart in age by like, I think, 8 or 9 years. So you can imagine, gosh, the stories. The stories for another time, though, Chris.
Why am I thinking of the Bill Hicks joke? When he talks about going on vacation with his family as a kid, it's like him kind of in person. It's like, there was my dad. We're all going to be up at 5 a.m., out the door by 5:02. And no matter which way we go, the sun is going to be shining through your window, Bill. So,
yep. Basically, we were the Griswolds on steroids. Okay, we were absolutely the. Let's get into the old paneled station wagon and head off to our and literally, it's, you know, and then one kid would start singing something, and the other kid would smack them, and then before you know it, there was an all out rumble in the back. I mean, our station wagon was, because of all the snow and the salt in the winter, I mean, are literally, I don't know if you remember those old Ford LTD station wagons that they had the rumble seats in the back that flipped up. And, you know, we'd have to, two of us would be stuck back there for the duration. And,
I'm a child. I'm one of those that was born in the late 70s, raised in the 80s. So I probably remember those type of seats. But I understand.
Well, I was a decade earlier, and you know, the family station wagon was it was both a horror ride and a roller coaster all in and of itself. With especially when it was all packed and full, and of course you never wore seatbelts. There were no seatbelts in there. I mean, you know, and what I'm saying is, the funny thing is, after a few years,
there were seatbelts. It was called Mom and Dad's arm.
Well, and either that, or we just face planted into the back of the headrest where my dad stopped fast. That's, you know, that was another
one. Shook it off, got back off, said that was awesome.
You're okay. You're okay. Yeah, you're okay. Rub some dirt in it or whatever. Yeah, that was the big thing. You know, when you come in with a bruise on your knee, my dad would be sitting there on the Saturday, or he'd be mowing the lawn on a Saturday or Sunday or whatever, and we'd come running. I mean, I'll never forget it. I took a spill on my bicycle one day, and my hands were bleeding, my knees were bleeding, and my dad's like, "You okay?" I'm like, "You all right? Here, come over here." And he'd take me over to the hose, and he'd freaking hose my legs down and my hands down, and get all the gravel out of my knees and my hands. And he'd go, "You all right?" And I, you know, you're sitting there, and he goes, "You're okay. Go back and play." You know,
walk it off.
Just those moments. I mean, today.
The old jokes of walk it off, put some ice on it. What? You chopped your arm off? Put some ice on it and walk it off. You'll be all right. What? You're dead? I'll walk it off. You'll just be fine.
More or less, it's basically it. But today, I mean, the kids hardly ever leave the house. And if they do get a skinned knee or something outside running on their razors or their, what do you call it, hoverboards or whatever, skateboards, and they come in the house and they need therapy. They got to go to a therapist and talk about it or something. So I don't know. The times are changed. Kids are getting more aggressively daredevilish, though, as they get older. Why? Because they want to be a YouTube sensation, Chris. They want to have their 15 minutes of fame, but they want to rinse and repeat their 15 minutes of fame every 30 minutes. So it's going to start with,
let's see if this wiffle ball bat hurts. Then all of a sudden, let's see if this Louisville aluminum slugger hurts. So.
Yeah, let's put my tongue in a rat trap, you know, see if that, see how that hurts. I've seen kids do all kinds of things like that. You sit there and, you feel like that little kid going up the bus staircase and laughing at his sister. That's got to hurt, but it doesn't hurt me.
Right.
So
that was that case on YouTube because part of the, don't know if it's part of the, one of the trends or what have you. Just to get views, they decided, let's see how many phone books it takes to for a bullet to go through. And it's like, I think it's only going to be two. And the wife, who in essence pulled the trigger, I think she was found guilty of second-degree murder or something like that. But because they planned it out and they thought, only two phone books would, or two reams of paper would take to stop the bullet. No. That's what you get, maybe a .22, but not a .38 caliber, Smith & Wesson, or whatever the heck they used. And it's like, no, you're going to be a world of hurt if not dead. No. And it turns out they were wrong. He died from his wound. She was pregnant and, charged with murder. Just for views. Just for views.
Yeah. Like you said, the extremes that people go to. But anyway, I really enjoyed this conversation, Chris. Yeah. It's been fun. I think my wife is getting ready to make dinner, so
okay.
I'm gonna have to say sayonara.
Before you go, promote what you're if you're doing anything or promote whatever social media that you're willing to promote because, here on the show.
Yeah, no, hey, like I said, I've got a couple of projects that COVID has, put a halt to in various stages, a couple of festival short films that are in post-production, and one that is right now, it's kind of sort of in a holding pattern. You can absolutely catch my updates on IMDb, which is imdb.me/TimothyMcLaughlin. If you want to check my IMDb page out to see what my projects are. I know I've got a couple of things that are on the burners, and hopefully they're going to materialize in the spring, and I'll be updating everybody on that. A lot of the stuff that I like to do is through Instagram. I like to post, a lot of my stuff there. And you can see me on Instagram. My handle is @TheTimothyMac. So check me out on Instagram. My name, Timothy McLaughlin. You can find me on Facebook. I'm not a huge player on Facebook. I'm not a huge player on Twitter. But something tells me that's going to probably start picking up this year because I've got a lot of people that are sort of pushing me in that direction to get a little bit more social media. But I do quite often, so check it out.
You do what quite often? Skype just blanked out for a minute.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I post I post myself. I post stuff on Instagram. You know, okay. Whether I'm in a certain place, I'll post something. I'll you know, if I find something, you know, intriguing, I'll put it up there. So yeah, check me out on Instagram at the Timothy Mac, and on my IMDb page. That's usually where you can follow. And there's links on my IMDb page that can take you over to, you know, resumes and stuff that can, you know, show you all the work I've done that maybe wasn't posted on IMDb. For instance, Actors Access, I think there's a link to take you over there to that too. So yeah, definitely would appreciate anybody that wants to follow me on Instagram. You know, and you can, I think you can even follow me on IMDb. There's a follow link over there too. So
cool. And when the show is posted, Timothy, I'll be the first person to let you know, and everything else. I do appreciate you being on the show and speaking with us.
Fantastic. Take care of yourself, Chris, and have a great new year, okay, buddy?
You too.
Welcome back, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the conversation we had with Timothy. So that being said, if you wish to join in the conversation with your comments, questions, smart remarks, whatever you might have, you're more than welcome to do so by following the links in the show's description. But as always, I like to state, you know, you can send them via a email, which our email is loncoatmafia@gmail.com, or you can leave a comment on our on the pinned post on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/ The Loncoat Mafia Podcast. And we do that. You could send us tweet at us, which again, while you're on our social media sites, please hit the like buttons, follow buttons, subscribe buttons, whatever that might be there. Kind of tell us the social media site that you're on, that we are kind of a group of people that's up and coming, and we should be looked at a little bit more in regards to what we do and say. So please do so. We'll be happy to have you part of our quote-unquote mafia family. So please do so. Again, our Facebook page is facebook.com/ The Long Coat Mafia Podcast. You can send us messages via Twitter when we are there posting stuff up, replying, or what have you. Our Twitter handle is Long Coat Mafia. Again, we do welcome you to follow us. And we do also post up. You could DM us, or leave us a comment on one of the many posts that we do on Instagram. Our Instagram handle is also Long Coat Mafia. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button or that follow button, whatever is there. We do have a TikTok channel. We do tend to post up little short videos every now and again. Our TikTok handle is LCM Pod. We do have a YouTube channel. Our YouTube channel, we don't have a custom URL for it right now because we are way below the 1,000 subscriber goal for that. But you're able to do find us on YouTube by either clicking the link in the description on our website, which I'll get to in a moment, or searching on YouTube for The Long Coat Mafia Podcast. And for all of you haters outside, yes, I've tried. I searched for the show on YouTube using both Incognito and on independent computers, which do not save our Google results. So it is the first channel that comes up. We do recommend you clicking that channel and hitting that subscribe button. We have been putting up a lot of exclusive content on YouTube as of late in regards to videos. I usually tend to put up content on both YouTube and Facebook if the videos are short enough, but if they are of decent length, or too short for YouTube, or too long for Facebook, or this content that is kind of finicky on one platform or the other. So I do put on exclusive content. So I do recommend you subscribing to us on YouTube and following us on Facebook. That way you're able to catch all the exclusive content there is. What else? Talked about YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. Oh, yes. Almost forgot. Twitch. We do have a Twitch channel. I've been streaming every now and again on Twitch. Our Twitch channel is twitch.tv/LCMPod. Or I should say LCM Podcast or Long Coat Mafia Pod. Either way, the links are on the description as always. And speaking of descriptions and all that fun jazz, you could, if you're listening to us or on the go and rather listen to us on your desktop or laptop computer while you work at home or go to school at home, you're more than able to do so. We're available on Apple Podcasts. We are available on Stitcher, Spotify, Amazon Music, I said Spotify, Pandora, apparently. Plus, I think, Audible. So you do have a wide variety of options of getting our show exclusively in these outlets, plus a plethora of other smaller ways as well. Plus, we are available on our main website, which is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. And yes, The Long Coat Mafia is all one word and is part of the website. And there you could not just click on all the social media links that we have to offer so you can find out more about us. You can listen to all our episodes going back from day one. That's right, all the beta episodes and how we kind of were very cringeworthy in the beginning. So all that's available for you to stream directly from the website or download and listen to the episodes at your leisure, so you're more than welcome to do that. But if you'd rather listen to us on the go, via a phone, a tablet, or what have you, or however you choose to listen to us, we are available on Apple Podcasts, Stitch Radio, Spotify, Google Podcasts right now. We're happy to have that problem rectified, as always. Amazon Music, Audible, a plethora of other smaller outlets that it's a wide variety of. I think we're on CastBox, and we didn't really apply for them, but we're available on CastBox. So again, there's a wide range of places to get our show. We ask you to, if you're able to, rate and review our show, because it helps. Depending on the service, it kind of helps. It does not. Heard a lot, wide variety of stuff. So we do ask you to subscribe. That we're able to get new content on a weekly basis, because I do try to post up weekly, and do subscribe to our outlets, because if I do decide to take a week off, which it has been rare, but if anything. You're able to do so. What else? I'm kind of losing. I'm rambling. I do apologize. So, please bear with the show. We have lots of content coming your way over the next couple of weeks. And let's see. What else? What else? Please stay tuned. The second part of our new series is going to be posted up next week. And I'm going to kind of end it right here. Right here. So take care. See you all next week and have a good one.
You've been listening to the Long Coat Mafia Podcast, the internet's most hated and mafia themed geek podcast.